Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. You have found us, Chef Cal, with my beautiful wife, Mrs. Chef Krista.
Good evening. Hello.
And we are just excited again to be here. The holidays are here. They are amongst us. If you'd like to call down here at KCNR, I'll give you the phone number a couple times. Ben would love to take your call and
I would pass you through
and or just forward the question if you don't like talking on the air. But it's 530-605-4567. Again, that number, 530-605-4567 for all of your cooking questions. Anyway, but welcome. We appreciate you joining us here. You can also send those questions through the podcast, which is cookinglikeapropodcast.net. And where can they find out? You have archived the past shows. This is our 25th show.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, we're a quarter of the way to 100.
025.
Yeah. So where do they get those? Is it
culinarilyyours.net?
All right, and those are so for the podcast, you've taken the commercials out, so they're
yes.
they're probably around 50 minutes, give or take. So you know they're a little bit shorter, and but yeah, all the information's there. And again, if you'd like to join in or chime in, you're welcome to do that. And last week I mentioned something, and this is all gonna be mostly holiday kind of a stuff, except there is one thing that's bugging me I'm gonna talk about. But as far as the holiday and people bringing food, you're going to other people's houses, you're bringing things like, you know, maybe relish trays or meat and cheese platters. When you put those in a combination together with crackers, a lot of times they'll use the term charcuterie for that. But it's just really just food that can sit out, and it's a finger food. You know, people can kind of munch. We used to use the term graze.
Well, they have grazing tables now where they will do a charcuterie across an entire table. It's called a grazing table.
Grazing table. Do you have to walk on all fours to get that, or
yeah, I think you just walk all around it. I saw one online on that somebody posted.
Before.
Yeah,
it's like a cow. You're grazing. But anyway, charcuterie. Charcuterie was something that I'd mentioned the word term last week, so I wanted to follow up on that. And basically, it's just kind of imagine the same thing with a charcuterie platter, except instead of your dried meats, you're going to have a variety of fish. You can have smoked fish, you know, poached shrimp, fresh oysters. If you have seafood that needs to be iced, then have some, you know, crushed ice so you can put down, keep it nice and cool. Caviar is a good thing. I was never much of a caviar person, but you know, you get a really good caviar and a really nice champagne, and it's quite a bit different than eating fish eggs out of the tackle box.
I would not. I can't do this fish
eggs.
No, I can't do it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's slide on that one. But, you know, matter of fact, we actually had something real similar to this charcuterie down in Monterey for our anniversary of a few weeks ago.
Yeah, they have these charcuterie towers. I'm trying to remember what they called it down in Monterey.
Yeah, and I loved it because we did this once at one of my restaurants where we use a lot of the dry ice. So it creates that smoke. So when they deliver this, you know, platter of, you know, chilled seafoods, or you've just got this wonderful, wonderful presentation with the fog coming out, and you know, it matches.
We actually have that picture online. It is the cover picture of our Monterey trip. We did a special Monterey.
We'll go to
podcast
culinarilyyours.net and check it out yourself. Another thing is tuna tartare. It's a great, great dish that we've done a lot of, and it's really simple. You want to get high grade. Well, anything that you're doing for these charcuterie platters, you really want to be high grade.
Okay, so first off, tuna. We're not talking tuna from a can.
No, I mean, okay, that could be used in some sorts. My grandpa had this amazing dish that I used to love. My stomach doesn't love it as much anymore, but he took tuna fish and mayonnaise. and stuffed it into half-pickled jalapenos. And, oh, my goodness, was it good.
If you like that sort of thing. I'm not a jalapeno person either.
Well, you know, they were the pickled jalapenos, so they weren't, you know, they weren't overly hot. And then when you have the mayonnaise base, you know, bound, you know, tuna salad in there.
But so. Going back to the tuna, so you're talking about tuna the way your grandpa did it, but you're talking tuna tartare. You're talking
fresh raw tuna.
But it has to be a certain grade.
Yeah, well, you just want to get a grade A. You want to get something that you trust. One of the best ways to get tuna, I'll tell you folks, is to get it already frozen. Because when it's frozen, then it's very likely it was frozen on the ship, portioned and frozen on the ship, or once it got into distribution, or not distribution, but when it was manufactured and portioned and prepped before it was frozen, they do that pretty quickly. So it's going to be less time out of the water up to the frozen point, and you can get it. They do add some coloring to it. If you've seen the
it's usually kind of a red color.
Yeah. I mean, if it's glowing, nuclear look to it, then I'd probably stay away from it. But red dye. Well, we're gonna, actually in the next segment we're gonna talk about food dyes, so we won't go off on a tangent on that. But there's a lot of things you can do, and I know it's just a great start. And I've been blessed to have gone to the French Laundry a few times in the past, and it's like crazy, like, you know, it's like the epitome of cuisine. Thomas Keller down at the French Laundry in Napa. The gentleman that trained him was one of my advisors, Chef Roland Hinnan. Still with us and still kicking, and boy, was he was a riot. Very French chef. I think he came from Lyon. But he joined me all 15 years. We brought him on to help us when we were competing internationally. You taught Keller, and the one thing I was getting to is when you walk into the restaurant at French Laundry, the first thing they do is they bring you up a glass of champagne, and you're still standing there. I mean, you know, you haven't even sat down yet, and they even kind of suggest you want to walk around the Rose Garden, or you can take a break anytime you want. And you can see the kitchen, the whole kitchen's all windows. But he makes this little salmon coronet. So he hands you this little, basically it's 2 bite, maybe even 1 for me. But it's called a mousse bouche. So it's just really the 1 bite French. Something to just kind of tickle your tongue.
Is that the one that he does the little twill that he turns into a cone?
Yep, turns him into a cone. And that thing you did on Facebook you thought was a shrimp, that was a horn of plenty. It was a cornucopia. I've made a lot of ice carvings in the past. I used to teach it. But anyway, Chris said, I noticed that you had texted somebody about, what is that? And it did look like a shrimp.
Yeah, somebody was
doing like a shrimp.
An ice carving, and it looked like a shrimp. I'm like, what is that?
So anyway, this cornet, it's a small little, looks like a little baby ice cream cone, maybe an inch and a half high, little cone. It's nice and crisp, and it's filled with a mixture of raw and salmon with a beautiful olive oil, a little bit of lemon juice, and some chives, and you just take one bite, and underneath it is a creme fraiche with shallots, and it's just, you could sit there and think, man, I could eat 40 of these. But anyway, that's how you start off. You want to tempt the palate and get people ready for the experience.
Well, so if someone wants to do a charcuterie board for holiday party coming up, mm-hmm. What would they do? Where would they go? What would they grab?
Well, things like, everything first off would be cooked except for maybe oysters. So you'd have the shrimp and maybe smoked salmon if you want caviar or tuna. Sardines is another good one. And then just you'd have your accompaniments for seafood, which would be lemon, capers, maybe some cheeses, but olives, crackers, wontons, different relishes and spreads. And some that people would just make like little bite-sized little thing. Marinated vegetables is always nice. Something with acid to kind of cleanse the palate.
Well, I learned something new, a mignonette sauce.
Yeah, mignonette, very nice. This is kind of a vinegar sauce, a little touch of red wine, and shallots. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that goes great, especially on oysters. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. But, charcuterie, something you can try, something you can play with, something you can Google, and then you can enjoy yourself when the holidays are here with something other than salami. Or, hey, throw some salami in there. Remember, be creative. But what I guess we're getting at is seafood can be an additive for that.
But a quick question. if we can't get crab, can you get frozen crab legs?
You can get frozen crab legs. You can get crab year-round, but it's going to be frozen. But the season's opening up quick, so we'll be okay with that. So we're going to take a quick break and cooking like a pro, and we are going to be back in just a moment.
Les poissons, how I love les poissons! Love to chop and to serve different meats. First I cut off their heads and I pull out their bones. Ah mais oui, ça c'est toujours délicieux. Les poissons, les poissons.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Redding Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season, open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th. Featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights, don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages. Plus, holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
I'm Shannon Phillips with the McConnell Foundation. Happy holidays. During this time, it's important to salute our military personnel, domestically and abroad, who work to keep our country safe. It's during the holidays that warm, happy feeling of being together with family that we sometimes take for granted how much we have to be thankful for. So we want to make sure that we let the families and those who serve know that we appreciate their service above self during the holidays.
This is Yolanda Lupo from Capturing the Essence Folk Cave in downtown Reading, thanking our veterans and currently active servicemen and women and their families, their sacrifice and service to our great nation this holiday season. We wish you a Merry Christmas
as part of Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR.
All right, welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Again, Chef Cow and Mrs. Chef Krista here. And, you know, I've been wanting to talk about this because it's been on my heart, and I've researched some of this lately. But knowing that food coloring can be bad for you. And one of the things that you'll notice when you dig into this is that when you go to a country that doesn't have all the regulations that we have here, and that what they'll do is they'll take like carrots and use that for the orange color, or perhaps they'll take, you know, beet juice and use that. So they'll, or turmeric. So they'll use natural ingredients to do that. Well, unfortunately, in the United States, there's a variety of things that you'll find in a variety of products. And I guess the whole point, folks, is just, you know, listen, read the label. You know, if you need to listen to, you know, instructions on things, on, you know, maybe more details on the dangers, go ahead and do that. But you need to read the label, see what's on there. And I generally go by the fact that if I can't pronounce it, you know, I'm not going to eat it.
I actually sent you a text. Did you read that? I sent you earlier.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
What things, things that were packaged, what the ingredients were in them about 25, 30 years ago, and now the ingredients that are in, it's a totally different list.
I think Cheerios had 4 ingredients, and then now it has 20 or something. But for a variety of reasons. One is the main word that we're looking here at here is processed. So as these foods get processed, so many things get added to them. And might be anything from filling agents to preservatives. It goes coloring agents and that kind of thing.
But they'll go from cane sugar to high fructose corn syrup,
which is really that's the one thing, folks, you really just want to stay away from. I know that ketchup is a big condiment, but you know, high fructose corn syrup is really it's not good for you in any way. You know, I mean, even if you were to try to do fructose or something or some other type of sugar substitute. But when it comes to the colors, red dye number 40 is the main one that gets the rap. Because, you know, the adverse effects on especially children, on activity and on their attendance, and it's been linked to ADHD and it's been linked to, I believe look at something like autism. I was talking to my mom and dad. I said, did you know anyone who's autistic when you were a kid?
No.
You know, I don't even know anyone had, you know, that was allergic to anything. So something has happened, and what has happened is two things. One is that there are people in the back recesses of the corner and boardrooms that are trying to make food flat just more addictive. And that's what's caused the obesity crisis, and that's why we now have, we've always had pharmaceuticals kind of,
Well, there's that, and they're trying to make them cheaper, and they're trying to make them last on the shelf longer, and real food does not do that.
Yeah. Well, red dye number 40 cannot be considered safe. You know, and again, you have to ask the question, why is it different? Why is it banned in other areas of the world?
Okay, other countries don't have it. Yeah.
And then yellow number 5 and 6, you know, it's been connected to asthma symptoms. So it's another thing to think about. Blue number 1, causes hyperactivity. And you think about these kids and they're eating, these, I don't want do brand names for the most part, but there, you know, there's these items that are snack items that become real popular, and they're eating them, and they're just destroying their brains while they're doing it.
Well, and they use citric acid, which is okay. They use that to kind of give you that I want more addictive taste because you want to drink something with it and eat more and drink more. But then they add the colors for visibility and visual appeal.
And again, using dyes and things like that. And blue is interesting because, you know, blue, like I mentioned, it's neurotoxicity, hyperactivity, and also allergic reactions. But blue is something, switching back to culinary, is a color that you never used in food when we were competing. You would never use blue because
there's no blue food.
Well, there's no natural way to make a blue color. You know, even blueberries are purple, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, yeah. So there's no way to make a natural blue color. You know, if it's something's blue, you probably don't want to eat it. It's not appetizing. You want to stay away from it. So that's kind of fake. So you just look at these things, read the labels, and find out. When you get into candies and sodas, you're really going to get hit with these things. Things like M&Ms and Skittles, Doritos, Cheetos, almost all of your sodas, whether it's Dr. Pepper, Pepsi, even things like Gatorade come out with this facade that they're actually a healthier item, but they still, you know, you gotta look at the ingredients. So maybe it has electrolytes, but does it have, you know, yellow number 6 in it? You know, something that's gonna, you know, maybe cause a challenge?
Well, here's a fascinating one. Cheese. Cheese is not yellow.
No.
They add dye to it.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why they have white cheddar. Then they add coloring to it, and you have what we call regular cheddar cheese. It's really kind of got that, you know, American cheese color to it. But, you know, I think condiments is another area. So we're going to talk about the colors of things and what's in the food. That's one thing I think we really need to look at as we try to live healthier lives and make, more healthy choices. Just look at the labels because even cancer and organ damage, fertility, genetic defects. I mean, there's a lot of things that have been linked into these things. And the thing is that they're alternatives, but these alternatives are going to cost a little more money. Well, I'd rather pay a little bit more for something that's not going to kill me, you know, or damage me or cause me to, you know, to have concerns. And so while I'm going through these things, I'm looking at condiments, you know, and different things that they'll make healthy choices instead. Things like hummus, guacamole, yogurt, plain yogurt, Greek yogurt. When you start getting into other things that are added to it, and another thing I look at was balsamic. We do a balsamic reduction, just dip strawberries in it, and that's like a mind-boggling. I don't know when you first got a chance to try that, but I do know that you have an affinity for it.
We were first together. We did balsamic strawberries.
A couple of decades ago.
Yeah.
It's just such a great, great combination. So I'm looking at condiments, and I come across Heinz 57, and just as a point of interest, I guess, I always thought Heinz 57 meant that there were like 57 ingredients or spices in it. But it's not. It's the two people that invented it. It was a man and a woman, and her favorite number, her lucky number was 5, and his lucky number was 7.
Really?
Yeah, I always saw 57 ingredients.
Yeah.
Now, there can be a lot of ingredients. I mean, I picked up, I was at a waiting for something to be done in an appointment today, and they had some snack things laying over there, so I went and looked, and these are a little small cheese cracker, and there's 27 ingredients in it. 27. But you know what I looked up here? The actual coloring ingredients are turmeric and something that's called annanato. Annanato. A-N-N-A-T-T-O.
I thought it was almond.
Yeah. The fact is that it's natural. You know, so I looked at, you know, some of the hot condiments. Tabasco is always going to be your best bet. When you start getting into things like sriracha, sambal leek, when you're getting into these spicy chili sauces and garlic sauces and most of them Asian, you just have to be careful with heartburn. You have to make sure you don't overindulge. Because I'll be honest, you know, I overindulged last night. Man, I woke up with this tummy ache. I got the sambal leek out, and when you get these flavors that are addictive and you put too much on it, you'll think about it. But capsaicin, it can irritates the lining of your stomach. So if your stomach is, you know, tough enough, I guess, or has been abused enough, or has been, you know, I don't know, you've eaten it enough where you can handle it, then, you know.
Well, let's go back to some of the things that they use for coloring. So we've talked about turmeric. Yellow,
mm-hmm.
Carrots for orange. The annatto, which I just looked up, is actually a spice.
Yeah.
Also called the achiote.
Yeah, it comes from the achiote tree. And then you also have beets.
Beets for...
I mean, beets are really easy to color. I mean, they color everything anyway. You know, they color your hands. They color... Matter of fact, the one way to do beets is you want to boil them whole until they're tender, a fork tender or like a toothpick tender. And then you pull them out. And then just, you know, with a pair of gloves, you just peel the outside off, and then you're ready with a perfect product. All you got to do is cut out however you want and roast them, saute them, reheat them however you want, season them however you want.
Just make sure you wear gloves.
Yeah. Well, one thing, I love beets, so I am a really big beet fan.
I love roasted beets.
Yeah, those baby roasted ones are multicolored. Those are nice. But
so if we're looking at the labels and things do have coloring in them, we're finding more and more that some products are coming out that are considered natural. But what's interesting is they have less ingredients and they're more expensive.
Well, they're always going to generally be more expensive because there's more in the process. Because the reason they're using cheap stuff is because it is a much easier process. They're just, you know, you don't need as many people because you're using cheaper stuff. But, yeah, again, it goes back to looking at the label. And I, again, as I started off for this segment, if I don't understand it, if I don't recognize it, then I'm not going to eat it. Or, at the very least, I'm going to look it up. And, you know, now when I first started as a chef, we didn't have computers, let alone cell phones. But now we have this, you know, computer in our hand that you can literally sit there in the grocery store, look at the back of the label. You know, make sure you give yourself a little more time when you're going to the store. But look back at the label and say, okay, I don't know what that is, so take a look at it.
If you have to Google it, you probably shouldn't be eating it, though.
Yeah. And what is that that one approved thing I was talking to you about?
Oh, Bobby approved.
Bobby approved. Yeah, you can actually take a pitch. Yeah. And I was unfamiliar with that, and then my friend Rob showed me that. So it's a Bobby approved, meaning that it's what? Healthy?
So Bobby Parrish is on Instagram, and he analyzes all products and to make sure that they don't have any of these negative after-effect ingredients in it.
I want that job.
And he's now got an app, and you can scan just about anything and find out if it's Bobby approved or not. If it's not approved, then it's got something in it that's either been modified, colored, etc. And if it is Bobby approved, then it's healthy for you and not considered something dangerous.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to Google who Bobby is.
Bobby Parrish. She's on Instagram.
Okay. Well, maybe we can get him on the show. He might come on the podcast and talk about how he does his theory and his system of being able to try things. Because I love the idea, you know, food. I've been a food taster for most of my life. So, all right, we're back at the bottom of another quick break. Cooking Like a Pro, 1460 AM, 96.5. FM, KCNR. We'll be back in just a moment.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir.
Reading businesses, listen up. Black Bear Diner is now offering catering for events, meetings, and gatherings. Fuel your team with our delicious homestyle meals that everyone will love. Ready to make your next event a hit? Visit blackbeardiner.com for more information and place your order. Black Bear Diner, your go-to for great food and good times.
Black Bear Diner.
Cornerstone Community Bank is proud to partner with KCNR for Operation Holiday Salute. We'd like to express our heartfelt gratitude to veterans and active duty service members for their dedication and sacrifice. Cornerstone Community Bank offers personal and business banking solutions tailored to fit your unique needs. We invite you to experience the warmth of banking with us. Visit one of our four branches in Redding, Anderson, or Red Bluff, or online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Happy holidays from our Home Helpers family to yours. At Home Helpers, we are proud to help your loved ones celebrate this holiday season from the safety and comfort of their own homes. We are equally proud of the men and women who can't be with us. To the bravest among us, far from home serving our country this holiday season, to all members of the military in all branches, past and present, and those who made the ultimate sacrifice. With respect, gratitude, and love, we thank you. Happy holidays from all of us at Home Helpers. Life takes you to unexpected places. Love brings you home.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
All right, welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Listening to the show, you can become, you can just cook like a pro. You just listen and follow, and you go to our website, all kinds of free information there at culinarilyyours.com or
.net.
.net, cookinglikeapro.net.
Net,
okay, both of them are .net.
Everything's .net.
And we'd also like to take this time to thank Charlie's Tap House, sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast, located again in the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center, 10 minutes south of town. One of the very few family restaurants left open in the area. So go on down there and grab some homemade pizza, delicious pasta, fresh, crisp salad. It's got a great house salad that they do. And also Charlu is making authentic Italian gelato. So you don't want to skip the trip to Italy. But they got a great unique beer wall that you can use a little credit card with and get just 1 or 2 ounces just to taste at a time. And again, so rewards program, great deals, receive great bargains. They actually got a real nice family meal deal going on now. Just go ahead and go to charlews.com and get all the info again, charlews.com. Let them know that Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef sent you. So
if you download Bobby Parrish and visit him on Instagram, Charlews on Instagram too.
Well, there you go. All right, so we talked about Thanksgiving, and one of the things with Christmas is it's almost kind of a duplicate when it comes to the meal and the menu. So you wait all year. Yeah, for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So you wait all year, and you finally get turkey, and then boom, you know, you get it right when, you know, when the leftovers are just being finished off. So there are a lot of other things people do. I think prime rib is something that's always a nice touch. some people are, you know, a little bit, you know, scared of getting a roast that might cost that much. I generally like to get my roast with the bone on it. Remember, prime rib has 12 bones, but you can get like a 6-bone roast, a 7-bone roast. They'll cut it however, you know, thick you want it. But it's 12 bones all the way across. And, it's just something that is very traditional. It's something you can do a nice dry rub on. They got what we call the 500 rule. We cook prime rib really fast, you know, and then slow it down. So start it fast and slow it down. But it's about 5 minutes per pound if you're cooking it really fast. But I usually sear my prime rib for maybe 15 minutes. So it's seasoned. It's got a dry rub on it.
And a quick sear.
Yeah. And then that 500 degree oven is going to get a quick sear. And then turn it down and just let it go to an internal temperature or whatever it is that you want. You know, you want medium, it's 130, 135, you know, 125 is rare, and 130 is medium rare, and, you know, you start getting up to medium well, and then well done is 160, which, you know, not going to have a whole lot of flavor. To be honest, I'd probably buy it up, you know, just a pot roast or something, or maybe like a round, and cook it, if you're going to cook it that done. But in Europe, they used a lot of flying animals. I know that roasted goose is that. What's that Christmas carol where they get the roasted goose?
Mm-hmm.
Is that Ebenezer?
Yes.
Is that Scrooge?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. They get the fatted goose. Ham has always been a favorite for mine. And ham is, it's just got a lot of cool things that go with it. I mean, I was a real fan of it when I was in Germany. I went to Southeast Germany, you know, right on the borderline of Switzerland, and that's where the Black Forest is. And they call it that because the trees are just so close together that, you know, the sun doesn't really get down to that foliage. So the pigs actually get a very, very rich and nutritious, you know, dining meal. It's what they eat. And remember, as we say, you are what you eat.
So, can I ask a question?
Of course you can.
What is the difference between a crown rib roast and a prime rib? Is it the crown rib, the one that they got the little white hats?
Yeah. A crown, what they do with the crown is they'll take the ribs and they'll do a slice in between each rib. And a crown just means that, like, they want to look like a crown.
Is it the same cut?
Yeah, it's the same piece and they roll it. Like rack of lamb is something that they crown a lot because it's just much easier to crown. But you have to cut it. And I think the more you cut it, the more opportunity to lose moisture, juice, flavor, all that kind of stuff.
And then you got to put the little paper hats. You know,
little paper hats. Yeah, we used to have, when I started out in the business, we used to use little paper hats on our roasts like that. You know, especially with lamb, and it kind of says, you know, so you can grab the bone and you can grab the little paper chef hat on the bone, so you don't get your hands, you know, greasy or dirty or anything like that. But yeah, Black Forest was fun. I got a chance to go there and see some pretty cool things.
A Black Forest ham here.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a regular ham and a Black Forest ham?
Well, if you go back in history, the Black Forest ham had a, always has a dark coating on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now a lot of times that coating is seasonings and spices. And I would check to see what that is. Originally it was, beer. No, it wasn't beer. I'm sorry. It was blood. Yeah. So they put beef blood on the outside of the ham, and it would cook it. It would actually give it a fairly distinctive flavor. But the ham these days, if you say Black Forest ham, chances are it did not come from Black Forest. It probably came from, I don't know, Virginia or something like that. And but it's not going to have that black coating on the outside. You need to look at the label and see what that is.
Okay,
most of the time it's spices.
Speaking of ham,
yes.
What's your thoughts on these spiral sliced hams? So basically, they're already spiral sliced before you heat it up.
Well, if you think about it, yeah, and you're right in heating it up because you don't have to cook it. It's already been brined, which means it's already been cured. Black Forest ham is dry cured. Most other hams are wet cured. They're in a brine, a liquid bath.
And then there's honey ham.
Yeah. Which would have a honey additive to it to get the flavor. But when they do the spiral ham, the thing about that is it's already cut. So it's just much easier than getting a ham with a, you know, big old bone in it that you have to kind of work around. So a spiral ham sometimes will have a bone as well, but they just slice it mechanically and it's super thin and
it doesn't dry it out.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. I don't like I'm not a real fan of spiral ham because it can dry it out because the slices are so thin. Remember, ham, you want to cook it slowly, and you just want to bring it up to heat. And heat, hot, is like 144, 145 degrees. All you want it is hot. You don't need to get it to 160, you know, I mean, unless the ham's discoloring or something, which you wouldn't eat it anyway, unless trying to, you know, kill bacteria. But no, you want ham just to get hot and keep it nice and moist. That's why I like this nice thick ham. Remember the old days they used to have the canned hams?
Mm-hmm,
you know,
yeah.
just always super tender. You know, a lot of times they'll smoke those in a variety of different woods. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the last segment. But other things, if you want to get, you know, different, I mean, because you just had turkey for Thanksgiving and you want to try something different, I'm an Italian Christmas meal. You know, like lasagna bolognese would be what they would go with. You know, bolognese is, you know, it's got the cream and it's got the pepper flakes and it's got the sausage in it. And it's just great. Bolognese is one of my favorites, depending on, I mean, you can use it with penne pasta. You can do any kind of pasta. In this case, but generally the Italians, would celebrate with a lasagna. And then how about, Mexican? What did we just do?
Tamales.
Lots of tamales.
And I had a venison tamale. That was fantastic.
We must have, I don't know what we did. We did tamales for a long time. I think we did like 160 or something. But yeah, you know, get a good masa, you know, which is just your dried corn. And it's different than like cornmeal. Okay, it's ground a little finer than cornmeal. And then it gets soaked in kind of a lime water, and then it gets dried a second time. So the masa is going to have a little bit of flavor to it. But when I do my masa, I usually add lard. And then instead, when it says add water, just add poultry stock or chicken stock. Or maybe whatever stock of the flavor tamale you're going to do. Pork, use pork stock. But it's just going to bring more flavor in. Is one of the challenges with tamales when you get them is it's just all masa.
Ours.
Yeah, I know. Ours look like I said, ours look like burritos. If I fall in the burrito category.
Now, if you don't want to make masa, a lot of times you can find a traditional Mexican restaurant or market that actually makes the masa that you can just go buy and pick it up.
That's where I got mine this year. I got mine there. I didn't have time to make it, and I just ordered it and picked up 30 pounds. Figure, you know, that's going to be enough to make a couple hundred tamales. We had different flavors or different stuffings, I should say. We had pork, and we had some that we did for vegetarian with just Ortega chilies. And
then something new we did this year is we steamed them in my new Instapot.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. And just make sure you hit steam. On there. And, it came out great. And
30 minutes.
Was it 30 minutes?
30 minutes steam from, 30 minutes is the cook time. You know, Instapots are not instant, people. There is a heat up time and there is a cool down time. And then there in the middle is the timing that they actually cook. So it was probably more like they were in there for an hour.
Yeah, but they're a quarter of the time or even less of something like a crock pot.
Yeah.
Because they're pressurized. And, boy, they just came out great. And that's the biggest challenge I have with tamales, other than the fact that they might have too much masa in them. I like to have some filling. But is that they take a long time to steam.
Yeah. So I want to throw out to you, I didn't grow up having Christmas dinner. We would always celebrate on Christmas Eve, and we would always do the charcuterie platters, the vegetable platters, but we would have probably a minestrone and a stew,
mm-hmm.
or a chili. So your chili minestrone was very popular. Then Christmas Day would be more of a brunch. We wouldn't do Christmas dinner because in the morning, get up, open presents, have brunch, and then Christmas was over at that point.
Bacon and pancakes. I love it.
Or Eggs Benedict.
Yes.
Eggs Benedict is a fantastic Christmas
many,
brunch.
Many, 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 many recipes of your father preparing a wonderful meal for us. So, but yes, this is it's a great time to experiment. It's a great time to try something a little different. You know, again, there's a lot of things that are out there. Just, you know, research it. Make sure you cook it the amount of time that it needs to be cooked. And enjoy, you know, and even if you're going with prime rib, you still do the potatoes and the gravy, you know, stuffing, I mean, even cranberry sauce for that matter, you know.
Waldorf salad.
That's
what I think of when I think Christmas.
It's Waldorf salad, apples, walnuts.
Apples, walnuts, celery.
Celery, kind of a mayonnaise-based salad, it's bound. But
you should put a little honey in the mayonnaise, a little rice vinegar, a little honey.
Yeah, it was a great salad though. Where we got and actually invented at the Waldorf Astoria. Or where is that?
I think that is New York.
Must be New York. Yeah, everything starts there. But anyway, so Christmas coming up, you know, enjoy yourself, have a Merry Christmas, have a wonderful time with family. That's really what the key is being able to spend some time with the family, just being reminded of memories and creating new ones.
And one more thing I could throw at you, Chinese food. Just go out for Chinese.
A lot of people do Chinese.
Chinese on Christmas.
All right. It can be a little bit of a tradition there as well. But anyway, so we'll be back to talk a little bit about beef in this last section. So hang on for that. And Cooking Like a Pro is going to be back in just a moment.
Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Hey friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Padron. 60th anniversary. My new personal favorite, starting with an exclusive Perfecto shape, handcrafted by one master roller using only the finest tobaccos from Nicaragua. After 60 years of excellence, this cigar is Padron's masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Cellars. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Welcome back. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We're cooking like a pro. We got one more segment here. We want to talk about beef. Beef. I mean, we just talked about prime rib, a lot of different roasts you can do. But the seasoning, when you season them, what I'm recommending is doing, for large roasts, is doing a dry rub. I really don't like marinades or anything that's wet, because it's going to keep the roast from browning and getting that golden sear on the outside. So I always add it. And you can add it, you know, an hour ahead. I don't know that I'd necessarily do, you know, like overnight or anything, especially if there's salt in it. Because remember, salt's
going to... We talked about that. Not a lot of salt.
Yeah, it's going to dehydrate. Yep. Yeah, so, but for when it comes to like things like large meats, like, you know, chuck roast and... And there's a variety of, you know, bottom round, top round, you know, the things that, you know, from the front of the, that's from the back of the cow. From the front, you got the chuck, which has all kinds of different roasts and pot roasts and a variety of, you know, the blade is there. There's a, you know, a seven bone pot roast. There's any number of things that you can get. So those are these meats that you're going to want to sear and then roast. Generally, you know, you start off searing them at a high temp and then turn them down, let them go slow. Remember, when something cooks slow, it allows that connective tissue to melt. And when that melts, then, you know, you just have the muscle fiber, so you have something that's tender. But you always have to still take off the silver skin. Now, you remember what the silver skin was?
It's the connective tissue, right?
Yeah. It was us. Remember, we did a fillet, a tenderloin.
And it's actually kind of, it's a white with kind of a silvery blue tint to it.
And it just coats the, it's in between the large muscles. So you're going to have it on the outside of your different muscles. And so just need to trim that off. That would be extremely, extremely chewy.
No, quick question. You talked about searing. Searing in an oven versus searing in a pan.
I think it's fine both ways. I think it's going to get more intense if you had a cast iron pan and you got it white hot or very hot or something, you know, a heavy bottom, heavy metal, heavy stainless steel, and just seared it in there. Because one thing the searing does also is it locks in the flavor in the sense that because it is searing the outside, so it is, you know, forming a barrier so flavor and juice can't escape. You know, and some people coat it with things. I've seen people coat them with the strangest things. Mustard is a very popular one.
Oh, you can do that for lamb. So can you do that on beef?
Yeah. Well, you can do anything you want. Now it's going to come out. I don't know, but mustard is a popular one. But you do, the thing is you want the dry rub to stick to it. And if the meat's, you know, very wet, then that's different. But I would oil your meat and then hit it with your dry rub and then oil it again because you want those seasonings to adhere to it. And another thing you don't want to do is you don't want to season like the top of a fat or a fat cap or even like we talked about silver skin because those seasonings are just going to melt right off the sides. They're not going to, you know, infiltrate into the meat itself.
So reminder of the fat cap, is that on the top or on the bottom?
Generally on the top, but it kind of depends on which direction you're looking at it. You know, most meats have fat, you know, on one of the exteriors. But, you know, marinated, again, is just a little more difficult to brown. You know, cook them at a low temperature, low and slow, get it nice and medium rare, slice it thin, slice it across at a grain. If there's anything that you ever learn from me, slice it across the grain. Because remember, if you slice it with the grain and you have these long stringy pieces, now you've got beef-flavored bubble gum, right? Because it's just chewy. You want to slice it across the grain. So look at it. It's easy enough to tell which way the grain's going and slice across the grain.
Now, what type of a
knife?
And the
grain doesn't always stay the same throughout the
whole
thing.
That's a great point, Ben. Great point. Our engineer just spoke up, and he's waiting for you to call, actually. But anyway, yes, you're very right. It does change, especially on things like tri-tip. It's kind of a pretty popular thing where it's more than one muscle. And especially your sirloins, they're more than one muscle. Muscles go a different direction. You just got to be paying attention. And, you know, if you're cutting from one direction, from right to left, you might have to turn the roast. But just keep an eye on it. Make sure you're always going across the grain.
Okay, back to my question. What type of knife? A slicer knife? Long one?
Yeah, you definitely want a long knife. You want a slicer. You don't want something that's going to cause, like, you know, this is going to, like, kind of chew through it. You ever seen something like a slice of meat? Here's a slice of meat, and it looks like they used a saw. Yeah, you know, you want something very sharp. You want to make a nice sharp cut because you want to keep all that moisture because that's the juice and that's the flavor, and you want to keep that in the meat. And if you don't cut with something sharp, you are going to end up losing some of that.
Most slicers are, what, about 10 inches long? So they can get all the way across and through?
Probably closer to 12.
10 to 12.
Yeah, 10 to 12. Okay. But again, something super sharp and generally not serrated, you know, for meats. Serrated is a knife that you actually does have teeth on it, and you'd use that for cutting your breads and stuff like that. But you want this crisp on the outside. You know, sometimes you want to maybe smoke it for a bit. That's another good thing you can do. Add some chips. I generally don't use chips that are harsh. You know, it's like, mesquite can be harsh. Oak and hickory are definitely harsh. So when I cook things, like I have a recipe that I do that's, smoked, sea bass. And I want a really, really mild smoke on it.
So how would you do that? Would you take like a roasting pan, start burning the chips and then put a lid on it really quick?
Yeah, I take a small handful of chips and I'll usually use fruit. So it's apple wood, cherry wood, peach wood off a tree. You know, it's fairly small. I put it in a little bit of orange juice just to soften up the flavor and to keep it from being a harsh smoke. And then once it comes to smoke, you just put a, you know, perforated pan over the top of it, a lid or a piece of foil over that. Only takes just, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. Pull it off there, and because you don't want to over smoke it, but you're already using a lighter flavored wood. But then you can easily finish it in the oven if you need be. I mean, it's all going to depend on how thick your sea bass is. Sea bass can be a half inch thick. It can be 3 inches thick. You know, it depends on how it's cut, but you do want to get that just enough smoke to get that flavor and then pull it out. That particular dish was actually served on we did it at the restaurant on a gorgonzola polenta, and it got a Roma tomato relish over top of it, and it was kind of a center of the plate presentation. It was popular.
You got smoky, creamy, acidic.
Yep, it's just very palatable. It all comes together. But anyway, so there's a variety of ways of being able to modify it. There's a ton of smokers out there, a ton of pellets that you can get that have flavor additives to them, whether it's from the meat product itself. Trying to get, you know, better meat, something that's, you know, going to be rated prime as opposed to choice. Prime would be higher than choice. Anytime you get Angus, you're better off. Angus just has more marbling. You know, they feed the cattle grass, so they're grass fed, but then they'll give them grains towards the end, and that's what it helps expand this marbling. So the marbling is the fat that's on the interior of the meat. And you'll get stuff that's crazy, like you start going into Wagyu, and then after that you go into Kobe. I mean, Kobe can be, you know, like $600-$700 a pound. I mean, it's literally ridiculous, but it's one of those things that, you know, you might only have once in your whole life. But they do have some, you know, again, you want to allow the meat to have fat on the inside. You can get that by two things. One, visually, by looking at it, and two, just from whatever it's graded. Okay, it should be graded prime. If it could be graded choice and still be fine. But look at it, and again, you want to see you want to see lines of fat inside the meat, okay, not tendons and ligaments and those kind of things. You want to see fat, literal fat inside there. And if you don't know, then ask your butcher. That's what their job is, right? They should be able to tell you. And again, if you're doing a roast, you're probably going to be looking at a muscle that's a working muscle. So a roast is going to be kind of from the chuck of the animal. Like, basically look at where the cow's legs are, from the front legs straight up, and the back legs straight up. Front legs straight up, you go into, like, you know, the shank and the brisket, and then you get in most of the chuck. And in the back, it's all round. You know, it's almost 30% of the actual meat you're going to use is going to come from the sirloin. And then in the middle, you've got the riding muscles, but those are going to be things that are going to be more tender, not going to have as much connective tissue. So you can use a dry cooking method. You know, saute it. You know, pan sear it. Char grill it. You know, any of those things works well. But just, you know, again, you get figure out your roast, and you can always just ask the butcher. I you know, you have to trust these people that they do it for a living. Say, you know what, I want to roast something and for a family dinner, and I got 12 people coming over. I need something that I can just roast and get a nice medium rare out of it. And they're going to give you something that's going to hopefully be, you know, work well. They want you to come back, right? So anyway, when it comes to beef, again, if you get the Wagyu and you go that far, you know, Wagyu, actually, you know what Wagyu stands for?
I do not.
Wa is Japanese, and gu is cow. So Wagyu just means translated Japanese cow.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and they treat them like kings right up to the point where they eat them, you know. So, you know, it's food that's going to have a quality of meat that's really not going to have all the connective tissue, because it doesn't really do much. It's kind of like the old days where we had veal, you know, where the veal was the cows that were kept in small cages, so they didn't move much, so their meat didn't get connective tissue because it didn't run around, and it'd just be beautiful and tender and white. And it was.
Now, what about basting? Do you baste roasts like you do a turkey?
You can baste them with whatever the natural juices are, but I'd probably do it afterwards. I don't think I'd worry about basting throughout the product or throughout the process.
Because you want more of a crispy outer skin, right?
Yeah, yeah, and basin's going to change that. So
you're going to add some potatoes to go with that and have a nice meal.
There you go.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. And for any of our previous shows, you can go find the Cooking Like a Pro podcast on Apple and Spotify.
Yeah. And now we're in the holiday season, right? And there's a reason for the season. And, of course, that's Jesus. But let's not forget to make a difference in someone else's day. Again, take the word random, as we always say, or take the word random out of random acts of kindness and be intentional in helping people. So Merry Christmas. God bless you. And we will see you next time here on Cooking Like a Pro. Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista. Merry Christmas.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.